Welcome, everyone, to All Out Coach. My name is Tim Mikelashvili. I'm your host of this podcast that's dedicated to creating momentum and to creating legacy in our life and career by addressing the fine and subtle details that may or may not be visible, yet fundamental to our growth. As we move through friendships, colleagues, and companies, there are very few people, I think, that remain by our side and few conversations that we remember forever. And I'm fortunate to be able to say that every single conversation that I've had with my guest today is stitched in my memory as a highlight. He has played a tremendous role in my life and in my career, professionally, personally, and he has a huge legacy on many others as well. And that's why I'm excited about being able to record this conversation. So stay tuned and listen to the life
lessons and
the transitions that Johnny Natt, my guest today, is going to talk about. His management career with P&G spanned 12 different assignments in manufacturing, sales, customer service, and human resources. He spent over 30 years there. And it was when he worked at Procter & Gamble that I met him first at a career fair at Xavier College of Pharmacy. He relocated a number of times to different manufacturing sites, offices, and he assumed positions in many senior roles. His legacy at P&G was his ability to handle difficult situations, conflicts, and helping others develop successful careers. He then retired from his rewarding career in P&G, and he started his own firm, One HR Partner, after which he transitioned to become the deputy HR director with the Georgia Department of Public Safety. And in 2015, his success as a deputy HR director led him to be appointed as a director of human resources with the state's newest agency. Currently, Johnny is the owner of the HR Workplace Coach, Chief People Whisperer, a business dedicated to helping employers and employees succeed by effectively navigating through the employee life cycle. Johnny, how are you today? I'm so glad to speak to you today.
Yeah, Tim, and thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. It's just a good feeling to be talking to you and to be reflecting back and looking ahead in terms of where I am and where I'm going. So thank you for having me.
Sure. It's a great time. You're right. You know, we're early in our 2022 year, and this is the time when we're probably most optimistic about the goals that we set and we accomplish as we transition from various different roles as well, or skills that we want to assess. So I think it would be great if you can share some of your lessons as you transitioned throughout your career and multiple appointments that I just reviewed briefly in the introduction.
Yeah, sure. I'd be glad to do that. And so I'm going to take you on a journey here because I'm going to go way back. And, you know, because my life lessons started early. I came from a very small area in the South, very small town in the South. And, you know, my dad was a sharecropper and kind of a jack of all trades. And my mom was a domestic worker who had a very limited education. You know, their education was probably, first and sixth grades. But they, you know, they taught me some of my key life lessons. You know, my dad certainly, you know, gave us the work ethic. He gave me personally my work ethic. And at that time, you don't really appreciate it. But, you know, as life goes on, you do. So it started then. My mom, of course, was, as I think back, she taught me my relationship skills. My mom was such a lovely lady who loved people and never met a stranger. She always was ready to engage anybody and everybody about anything. And she did it in a very favorable way. So that sort of planted the seeds in my life in terms of moving forward. And as I went through school, even as I went through elementary school, people saw something in me, and you know, you never know why. You always sometimes ask yourself why. But I was blessed with the fact that some body always saw something in me, and they always put their hands on my shoulder, gave me a push in the back, you know, and kept me going forward. And I'll remember my earliest encounter with that was in the sixth grade. My first mentor, didn't really know what a mentor was in sixth grade, but you know, this gentleman came in and basically encouraged me to look ahead, to look bigger, to look better. And he taught us some of the basic essential life skills that, you know, you wouldn't think you'd learn in elementary school, you know, like etiquette, you know, in terms of, you know, how to behave at the table, even right. Little things like that. But this gentleman, who I give credit for so much of my success, he followed me all through high school and kind of stayed in touch. And I think the moment that I remember with him was as I approached my senior year in high school, we basically, the schools were then desegregated. And the school that I was going to, which was a predominantly Black school, was a brand new school. And I had gone there for 3 years and I was elected class president of my senior class, and I was playing football and I was kind of Mr. Everything. So when they desegregated, I went to the local school, which was a predominantly white school. And I was, again, suddenly a minority. But this gentleman, as I began to push back on that and be negative and not attend classes, he came to my house and he, in front of my parents, he grabbed me behind my shirt collar and said, "You will be out there and you will come back to school." And I did. And he picked me up and brought me to school every morning. I was able to transition, Tim. And I had a new perspective because of him. And by the end of the year, I was elected most outstanding senior male in my class of predominantly white students. And so I was able to learn how to be resilient, you know, and how to be agile and how to adjust to different situations. That continued to carry forward even as, and I remember, you know, my summer jobs in terms of what I did in between school years and my junior and senior year. I went to work as a clothing salesman, and you know, throughout my life, I've always been a first. You know, I was the first a Black salesperson in that store. I, you know, throughout my career was always a first.
That's so, something that not many people can say, by the way, Johnny. Oh. And even you and I, the way we met at Xavier College of Pharmacy also, you know, right? Yeah. Also great, just great coincidence. And just we shared a lot of similar, I think, approaches. And
yeah,
you know, and that's, we crossed borders, right? Transition. I used the word transition there, but we've crossed over. And I think that some of the most independent thinkers or successful people that I am inspired by are the people like you who are able to transition and cross over different environments.
Yeah, so. And by the time I met you, I had already, you know, going through some very exciting life experiences, you know. So, but it's about relationship building, and that carried forward. And as I continue this journey that I'm on, and I went through college and immediately went into the workforce, and I my first work experience was with General Mills for about a year and a half. And I went into a manufacturing situation as a young supervisor, again, a first, but I learned how to value my resources. I learned how to use my resources. A quick story, I thought I was a little know-it-all at that time. You know, you're trying to show what you know. And I was trying to direct some of the most senior people in the plant. I was trying to tell them how to do their jobs. And they suddenly decided that, "All right, you're going to tell us what to do? We're just going to let you tell us what to do." And they shut the operations down, which cost the company a lot of money, because when you shut those machines down, you got to go back and clean them out. But I learned how to listen and how to use my resources and how to respect people. Okay, so suddenly that whole thing changed, and it changed the direction of my life in terms of you know, how I should do things. Yeah, so that was my really first extensive, you know, deep dive in terms of the workplace, in terms of how things work, mm-hmm. you know, and how you treat people. So that was good. That continued, Tim, as I left General Mills because Chicago was probably too cold for me. And I came back down south and started my career with Procter & Gamble. Several years ago, when you started with P&G, you started in the lowest level position that, so I started as a team manager. And it was in the warehouse. We called it warehouse and shipping back then. Now it's mm-hmm. called distribution and logistics. But it was a very manual facility. Lots of the work before conveyors and automation came in the warehouses. It was very physical, physically demanding type work. Mm-hmm. So the type of individuals that I was supervising, you know, were, again, you know, not your college educated student people. They were people with, you know, basic, you know, elementary, high school, everything in between backgrounds, good people, you know, mm-hmm. And again, so I had to, again, apply what I've learned. And it was a very hostile environment because I walked in right in the middle of a union organization attempt. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, you know, develop relationships and talk to people. And as a result of that, you know, the company obviously persuaded people not to organize. And we began to listen closer to what people's really concerns were. I can't help but tell this story about one of my assignments because it almost led me to leaving Procter & Gamble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I may have mentioned this to you before, but I had been in several assignments and none of them were vertically promotional assignments. They were all horizontal, lateral type movements. And I was beginning to get very frustrated and I couldn't understand why. Yeah. And I couldn't understand why is this? So yeah. I did what most people would do today. They would leave, right? They would say, well, I'm just not a good fit for this organization. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Once again, Tim, I had someone come and tap me on the shoulder and it was a good friend of mine. And he said, Johnny, I understand you're contemplating leaving, you know, P&G, why are you doing that? And I said, well, you know, I'm working hard. I'm doing shift work. I'm, you know, really busting it right now and nothing's happening. I see people that I recruited go past me. And so he looked at me and he said, Johnny, help me. He said, have you communicated what you want? Have mm-hmm. you demonstrated what you're capable of doing? Right. You know? Have you had conversations with anybody? And I said, no, I'm just working hard. He said, you get a paycheck to work hard. That's what's expected of you, to work hard. Right. But have you communicated what you want? Have you demonstrated that you're able to do more? Well, you know, after those conversations, I started taking some action in terms of listening to what he was telling me to do. Mm-hmm. And long story short, I got promoted. I got promoted within 3 months because
you clarified your intentions more. And is that what you would attribute that to?
Here's the way I translate that. I translate it as I understood how things work.
Okay.
I understood now how systems work. You know, mm-hmm. my culture, the culture that I come from, it mm-hmm. always said, you do not brag on yourself. You know, you just work hard and people will take care of you. Okay.
Yeah. Which you learned from your father, the work ethic,
yes,
right?
And yes. Yep. But that doesn't hold true in the workplace. You know, you've got to have advocates. You mm-hmm. know, you've got to advocate for yourself, which kind of goes counterculture. Right. But I learned that when I learned that, I said at that time, I knew I would be in a place where I am right now. Because I said, I really want to help others understand how things work in the workplace. It's not about coming in and working hard. And no. It's about aligning with the plant's vision, the company's vision, you know, their mission. you know, their purpose, their philosophies, getting aligned with that and demonstrating that, you know, you can do that. You can be the owner. You can act like an owner. Okay. So from there, you know, things went, you know, pretty smooth throughout my career at P&G, and I've continued to help people, and that's why I do what I do today. And you know, I think you introduced me as the HR Workplace Coach, and I recently changed that name to JJK Workplace because it's not always just about HR. You know, and I changed it because it's more about the workplace and in terms of how do you move through the life cycle of the workplace. You know, from the time you come into the workplace, okay, how do you onboard effectively, you know, and join up with the people? How do you do that? All right. Because that's a critical time. Those first 90 days is critical, and people don't always do that. And a lot of companies don't have good onboarding programs to help you get into the work quickly and start contributing and understanding how you fit into that workplace. Because if you don't see where your contributions, your work is doing anything toward the big picture, the outcome, then you don't feel valued. So that's how I moved into being a workplace consultant. And because I've seen so many people during my HR career, Tim, who left businesses, who left their jobs because they didn't understand what was expected of them, nor did they understand how to communicate, you know, to those leaders who supervised them, you know, what they wanted, what they needed in order to succeed. So, you know, that's a little bit of, you know, my background.
Thank you. Thank you. I think you shared some great lessons that are important for both managers to consider, as well as those who are building up their career and trying to, you know, rise up in the ranks as well. You know, to be more clear in their communications, to understand their expectations, and to how to create their own momentum, right? Which you have done. So 3 years ago, Johnny, I started this All Out Coach podcast because I reflected that, you know, on my career, and even though I had purposely tried to find something new and something different, pick up new skills in every single role, I've essentially fulfilled the same or similar role in medical affairs, in field medical affairs. And I, by conversations like this with you, with other business leaders in pharma, outside of pharma, is how I've been able to accelerate my own growth and my own, I think, value to others as well. I want to ask you a few questions about that life cycle that you just mentioned, right? The employee life cycle, to understand that human side of management. Because I think you spent many years in human resources. And when many people think about human resources, they focus more on the resources side of it, right? That human resources usually provide that rule and order, the discipline, the opportunities to become leaders, but not necessarily proactive employees who help you become a leader. And that's what I've found that distinguished you from, and that has redefined what that, you know, that function, human resources, really is. So, you know, if we can break down the human side of management and start with recognizing talent early. Who do you hire? Who do you decide to mentor? What are some tips you have there? Or how do you recognize people beyond their, let's say, resumes or their experiences?
Yeah, that's a good question, Tim. And it does start, you know, prior to the time, you know, a person starts their employee life cycle. But you know, I've been doing a lot of diversity recruiting lately, and part of that is not actually the recruiting, but it's to kind of help the owners, the employees understand what does it take in order to have an individual come in and be a good, I don't like to use the term fit.
Right. Me neither.
It is about fit. It's about culture fit, you know? So, you know, you certainly wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't hire a person who's a vegetarian to work in a meat plant, right?
Right. Yeah.
They wouldn't be happy. It kind of goes. So I look for people and you're right. I pay very little attention to resumes. Mm-hmm. Because I used to write resumes and I can make anybody look as good as they want to on paper. But what I encourage businesses to do as they first is to get a broad base of good talent, you know, and don't lower the bar. But once you do that, I look at behavioral interviewing and behavioral interviewing for me kind of says, you know, what have you done in the past? You know, your past behavior is a pretty good indicator of what you're going to do in the future. How are you going to behave in the future? So, you know, I try to get that candidate talking about themselves, talking about their likes, their experiences, you know, so I can look. Recruiting is not rocket science. It's very intuitive. It's in, you know, and when I can remember when I first talked to you, when we were at Xavier, what came across immediately is your resilience. You know, you were in an environment where it typified the environment that I was in several years earlier, you know, as being the only or one of the few. Mm-hmm. And just blending in so well, you know. So I look for those kind of qualities in people who are agile and have been through some situations, depending upon the environment that you're moving them into. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of you want to do your best not to understand the technical skills, you know. Cognitively they can learn those technical right. skills, you know, but do they have the soft skills, you know? Are they able to handle things like conflict in the workplace, you know, or, you know, what, understand how they're perceived by others, you know? Are they flexible in terms of managing that? You know, what's their level of emotional intelligence? Are they able, when I talk to them, do I get a good feeling for them? Are they empathetic? You know, those are the kind of values that I encourage, you know, employers to look for as they bring people into the workplace, which is totally, it's a game changer today, because you and I both know all of the changes, all of the things that's happened socially and technically, you know, in the last, even just the last year, things have turned upside down. You certainly want people coming into your organization who are resilient, you know, and change oriented, you know, because gosh, you know, you've got to be able to turn on a dime because things change. You go from working in an office to working virtual, and you've got to feel good about those kinds of abilities to do that. So anyway, probably more than what you asked me for, but it's so important. It's so important that a person gets placed right. Sometimes, you know, we see people come with very high GPAs, you know, that typically you, I don't use that anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't use that. Because now,
Johnny, when did you realize first that you knew how to observe people and the right talent, or how did you learn that skill yourself?
What prepared me well was my background in manufacturing. In manufacturing, you know, people came through through the organization, rose up in the organization a couple of different ways. We hired college students and we promoted from within. And, you know, a lot of the people that we promoted from within, and Procter & Gamble, I'll use them as an example, did an excellent job of preparing people for the next level. Okay, they they didn't just, because you were a good individual contributor and you did well as an individual contributor, they're going to promote you to supervision or management, but they also gave you, I mean, it was nothing to take 6 months before you would assume the responsibility of the next level job when you're coming in as an individual contributor to management. So they gave you those skills. So I saw people succeed, you know, and I saw people fail, okay? Mm-hmm. Because either they could not adapt, they could not adjust, you know, they couldn't learn. It's all about how you make people feel, right?
Right.
There's nothing. And the empathy piece is critical, you know, and, you know, some people can, you know, it's a hard thing to do, to lean in, because you make yourself very vulnerable when you're empathetic, right? Mm-hmm. And they couldn't do that. So that's when I began to see, Tim, that there's something different here. You know, and sometimes we set people up for failure when we don't consider their ability to be empathetic in the workplace, to have compassion in the workplace.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years ago, we didn't talk about feelings. 10 years ago, we didn't talk about feelings. Now feelings impact, you know, Daniel Goleman, you know, with his emotional intelligence, have found that, you know, the way you feel impacts the way you perform in the workplace, the decisions you make, and even bigger, whether you stay or not.
Right.
You know, attention is a big thing. So anyway, I hope I've answered your
question. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That time of your career was the inspiration and the observations that you had that led to your HR and other roles. I'll tell you, Johnny, that my initial impressions also were that empathy that you had also, because when I was searching for a career in the pharma industry, I realized very quickly how competitive it was going to be. And it was indeed. And even getting a chance to have a interview or be screened by someone or even considered even back then. Now that has been magnified. It's become even more competitive. There's a stronger candidate pool. And I remember you used to come to Xavier every year at the career fair. And I was, and we would have conversations, and not only conversations, but when I would have an interview, you took the time to not just share some advice, but also actually give me some detailed pointers and lessons and tips, and even rehearse with me. And that took a lot of empathy from your busy lifestyle and work schedule, I imagine. And so I think, I agree with you that now a lot of the teams and businesses are realizing that they have to manage not just people, but manage their lives too, which is challenging when you're trying to meet some results and outcomes. But nevertheless, that's what, like you mentioned from that Daniel Goldman's book, right? That's what leads to performance. In fact, I heard those words first from you, emotional intelligence. When I didn't really, you know that there was a science about this. I kind of did the things instinctively. So you recognize talent, and then you hire the person that you like, that you think is going to help you succeed. Now, in terms of their, you know, how they interact with each other, how do you inspire them to share not only words and information, but to share those feelings and to actually collaborate?
Tim, for me, relationship is everything.
Yeah.
Okay. To me, I mean, we all learn to build on our strengths, and I've always been able to establish good, strong relationships. And I encourage the same thing. You know, I most people go into a workplace and they work on a team pretty much. You know, I tell them about team effectiveness in terms of how to be an effective member of the team. And we talk about six things. When I work with them, and I tell them, you know, always get clear on direction, understand your role as a leader, understand your role, understand what expected around communications, understand how the work gets done. And the final one, and I put it on a I depict it as a wheel with six spokes. And the sixth spoke, Tim, is relationships. And I tell them early on, I said, look, you know, if you've got a tire and it's got six spokes and some of the spokes are moving away, the wheel will still turn, but it will not turn as effectively as if all six spokes are there. I said, now, I mentioned relationship as the last spoke, but guess what? It is the most important thing that you can do is to establish relationships. Because, Tim, relationships build trust, okay? And trust makes the work fun. And what I mean by that is when you've got a trusting relationship with someone, you can't be everywhere. But even when something goes wrong and that person has a good relationship, you know what their intention was. You know their intention was to do good. It wasn't about not doing good. When you have a communications issue with someone, they know that, you know, your intention was good. It was not. So you don't have to fight those battles that you normally would have to fight if you don't have a good relationship. Okay. So I tell everybody, go in. I was coaching a young lady yesterday and she said, Johnny, I just want to come in and do my job. I said, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. I understand you're kind of an introvert. That's okay. But you've got to establish good, strong business relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you're very private. I'm very private as well. You know, but at the same time, you've got to know, you've got to put yourself out there a little bit. Okay. You've got to do that. Let people know who you are. Yeah. You know, let people know what your visions are, what your objectives and goals are. You know,
do you find that when people trust each other, they're more innovative also?
They're everything.
Everything,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, they're all that. Yes. They perform at a better level when they trust each other. You know, you and I have been knowing each other for years. I mean, look, you can pick up the phone anytime and call me and I'll be there. And same thing with you. I know you'll be there. If I have a question, I can call you anytime. And it comes from a trusting relationship. Yeah. And the thing about it, Tim, is it takes time.
Okay? Yeah.
It takes time, you know, and it takes making yourself vulnerable. You know, I mean, you know, some things about me personally that other people might not know. And, you know, I know your kids, I know your past, I know where you're from, all those things.
Right.
But it builds a bond, it builds a closeness.
Absolutely. In fact, that's what I wanted to also make some remarks about in this episode, in this discussion, that, you know, I find that I express myself and who I see myself as openly and fully with you. And because I know that you have my best interests, and that's exactly what I wanted to communicate today here, because in my previous discussions and previous episodes on All Out Coach, I've presented a relationship between self-identity and success, because I think that our success depends on our self-identity, because others always form some opinions of us or shape some image of who we are or who they want us to be, right? And that often conditions that identity. But mentors like you never doubt of their intentions, not for one second, and you express your identity fully. And imagine, like, how do you do that in the workplace? Because if you're able to express that full potential, then you have those trusting individuals who are innovative and who perform better, like you mentioned. And so I think that's the big dilemma in the workplace. So we both talked about performance, right? So at the end of the day, what is your position on metrics or on measuring performance in order to distinguish who is eligible for a particular recognition versus a promotion, let's say?
What you can't measure, you shouldn't do, right?
Okay.
So, you know, and I'm going to talk about performance, and then I'm going to talk about metrics relative to emotional intelligence, because there are metrics there too that we have just found out about in terms of, you know, what's the difference in terms of performance level. But no, as an individual going in, when you're assigned to a role, you know, I believe that the most important thing is clarity of expectations. Okay. Know what's expected of you. Know what success looks like. And that's where metrics come in. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, you want some empirical data that shows that you, especially if it's something that's done repetitively or, you know, consistently, you know, because all of those things, if they all cascade up to the mission, the mission of the company, you know, so everybody wants to see how am I contributing to the success of the mission of the company. Mm-hmm. So metrics are you can't not pay attention to them, but you got to be very clear, and the metrics have got to be, you know, they've got to be smart. I mean, they got to be specific and measurable and actionable and things that you can relate to. I mean, I think where the metrics confuse people is that they're hard. First off, it's something that you don't have full control over. Okay. There are things on the outside that are impacting your metrics. So, mm-hmm. you know, the number that shows up, you may or may not have any control over, you know, that. So metrics need to be specific, you know, to what you're contributing and what you're held accountable for. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people about the little circle, you know what's in your circle of control. Okay. Mm-hmm. Know those things that you can influence. Okay. There are things outside of your circle of control, and then there are things that you can influence. So I think you need to know what those are. Clarity of expectations is everything. Mm-hmm. Look, I can remember when, and this was very recent in my first, when I went to work for the state of Georgia as a deputy HR director. Mm-hmm. Coming from the private industry, I had a lot of ideas. I'm saying, oh man, I'm going into this. You know, you always hear rumors about the state, about state government, you know, how they're not mm-hmm. as current as private industry. I said, oh, I'm going in here. I have a lot of ideas I'm excited about. Right.
Yeah.
You know, implementing new ideas. And, you know, I go in there and I try to do that. And fortunately, my director called me aside one day and she said, Johnny, she said, I think it's great that you have all these ideas, you know. He said, but you need to develop a relationship. Go ahead and develop a relationship first and understand what is the unmet need, you know, at this point. Everything you're trying to, and know what our priorities are, know how what you're proposing supports our goals and our strategies. Mm-hmm. So again, your metrics have to be aligned with your goals and strategies so that you can feel like you're making an impact. Well, I did that. Mm-hmm. I did that. And I started just kind of talking from a position of goals, you know, what were the goals for the agency? What was the, and I had tremendous success, a lot more success, you know, by not trying to implement my idea, but look at the agency's strategies and goals in terms of working toward that. So mm-hmm. from a performance standpoint, I think that's key. I think also, you know, Maya Angelou, you know, had this famous quote that I love. She said, you know, it's not what you say, it's not what you do, but it's how you make people feel.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's absolutely. And, you know, for years, we never talked about feelings in the workplace and the impact of feelings in the workplace. But, you know, there's an exercise that I was taught, you know, doing my EI certification, and it's called the EI experience. And it asks you to think about your best boss ever. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they ask you six questions, things like, hey, did that boss demonstrate awareness of their feelings and their emotions when they talk to you? You know, and you can rate each one. They made us rate each one on a score one to five. You may have seen. And then you compare that. You ask them the same questions about the worst boss. Okay.
Right.
And there's normally a gap, a significant gap in the rating between
Right.
The best boss and the worst boss, you know? So I think that's a new metric that we need to put into the workplace today, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. It validates Maya Angelou's quote also.
Yes.
The data, right?
Yes. You know, people don't leave companies, they leave bosses and they leave environments where they don't feel comfortable, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think one of the metrics that we need to start putting on our dashboards is turnover,
right?
You know, is engagement, you know, things like that.
It's a huge problem these days, right? Based on the data.
It is.
I mean, maybe a function of how the next generation, right, the millennials, right, and the new generation in the workplace is constantly transitioning and moving from one job, one skill to another. But I don't know if they're always deliberate, if they always know how to incorporate these emotional intelligence skills that you talk about a lot, Johnny. And so I think the key is to be more personal and have those human skills in this impersonal age, I think, right, that we're living.
No, you're absolutely right. No longer can we ignore that. We can't ignore that anymore. You know, mm-hmm. we always say our most valued resources are our people, right?
Well, right.
Now we've got to start walking the talk and treating people like that they are our most, you know, valued. One of the things I think that came out of the whole COVID during 2020 is we realized that we need everybody in the organization, you know, from the janitors who's cleaning the place up, all the way up, not just our top leaders, okay? We need everybody. So you've got to make sure that everybody's engaged, you know, in the work. Everybody's being treated and felt and feeling like this is a good place to work, you know? Mm-hmm. But along with that, as you said, we've got to prepare people for change, you know? And you know, when I started with Procter & Gamble, there was an unofficial saying that you have guaranteed employment for life. Okay. And because nobody ever got laid off. I mean, things were great for years. In 1995, things started to change. Mm-hmm. And it started to change because Wall Street started looking at, you know, expectations and what they were delivering quarter to quarter. Things changed at that point. Okay. From that point on, you know, when if you exceeded your expectations on Wall Street and didn't meet them, guess what? Your stock price took a hit. And what I saw was that, you know, we started doing a lot of people shifting at that point, moving people around.
Yeah.
And some people,
what I was always fascinated about taking a look at your employee life cycle, your own, was how long you had spent in P&G, you know, back, you know, because that's how I wanted to see myself. In my first job, Johnny, I saw myself working for AstraZeneca, for example, for my entire career in cardiology. But that's just not how things panned out. And now it's even less of a likelihood nowadays for employees. But you know, I appreciate that, you know, the picture you just painted for us.
Yeah, but it's in the point you make about continuity in the workplace is important. Personally, you know, things have changed a little. I know we talk about millennials and Gen Z and baby boomers.
Right,
and
right. Yeah.
We spent a lot of time talking about that, but probably too much time. I think if we stay consistent, you know, with hiring the right people, okay, starting them off on the right foot, giving them the training they need to succeed, you know, coaching them, giving them feedback, you know, coaching, training. Mm-hmm. I think if you do that hasn't changed a lot. Okay.
Right.
Now, granted, you know, technology has come in different. I mean, the world has gotten smaller. Now, you know, we're a much more diverse mm-hmm. workforce today than we were, you know, 10 years ago, much more diverse. I mean, people, you know, we have a need for different skill sets that are not available here in the US. So we have people from, you know, with technical expertise that come in from all parts of the world.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So that has changed. The workplace has changed from in terms of who's there, but I think it's for the better. You know, I talk about diversity. It's one of the most powerful tools that we have in the workplace. And when I talk about, I'm talking about diversity of ideas. And including
get people too. Right?
Yes, yes. And getting people included, feeling included. You know, we used to do a thing called we had a metaphor called in the house. Okay. The house was people who were working and learning continuously and developing and growing. And then we had a metaphor that said out of people who were out of the house, you know, in every workplace, you have probably 20% of the people who are out of the house. And they're out of the house because they're feeling like they're not a part. They're feeling that they were treated differently, or something occurred, some kind of negative treatment mm-hmm. occurred that caused them to be out of the house. Well, think about the productivity that you're losing from those 20% of the people that you're paying the same as the ones who are feeling inclusive.
Yeah.
So,
And organizations don't think about that enough, probably, right? Sufficiently.
Yeah, it's low hanging fruit, I call it, Tim.
Right.
It's if we could take advantage, take full advantage of the people that we have in who are shut down, who feel shut out.
Right.
You know, not that they don't know, they can't. They know. You know, mm-hmm. you talk about creativity. Man, we got some folks out there with just tremendous ideas. Right. That could move most organizations forward, but we don't take advantage of them. We let them people, we think, oh, well, they don't want to come in. They don't want to do any more than they're doing right now. They want to,
right?
But you know, it's like they've been invited to the dance, but nobody's asking them to dance, right?
Yeah.
You got to ask them to dance, come in and join the party.
Yes, it breaks my heart sometimes, some of the stories that I hear to this day from people who I know that they're very accountable for what they do, the intentions that they have, and they're high performers. I've known them for years, and yet that's the piece that's missing, that they don't feel like they're included or they're belong. And I get phone calls all the time because, as you know, I'm mentoring. I have an official formal title in a nonprofit organization in my industry, but I also I'm an informal mentor, and I have a group, you know, of my colleagues from across different companies. And just some of the stories that I hear about this are things that I want to change, you know, because I think I've endured a lot of these different experiences myself. And that's why that leads me to my next question is, how have you helped manage those conflicts, those difficult kind of situations among the people that you managed, or, you know, the diversity of opinions? Were there some, some moments that have stayed with you to this day that maybe you can share with us?
Yeah. I mean, I've had several, I think the key, the common thread throughout is straight talk.
Just straight.
Mm-hmm. You gotta, and when you have a relationship with people, you can give them the straight talk. I mean, I've had people come in, and today I do a lot of executive coaching. Mm-hmm. Okay. And people come to me because they feel like they're not moving forward fast enough, or right. they're stuck. Are they having conflict with their manager or their peers? And it's making them look like they're not a team player. So they're not. So, you know, and that's where, you know, the answer for them is within. They know what the problem is. So I try to help them to articulate that themselves. The key, Tim, I think when you have those issues that people feel like are getting in the way.
Right.
Is to ask them some questions. I ask very open-ended questions. And when people start talking about the problem, the answer always is in the problem. You know, for example, and I can recall probably the one that's most profound is, you know, a young man, and I was with pharmaceuticals in the pharmaceuticals group, and a minority fellow came to me, and he felt, you know, he and I had a relationship, and he started saying, "Johnny," he said, "I'm just not getting promoted.
Right.
I'm not getting promoted. I don't know what to do. I'm hitting my numbers and doing this." So I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, basically, you know, what's your goal? You know, what do you want to get promoted to? Okay. Are you available? Are you available to go wherever that opportunity is? You know," I said, "do you feel like you have all the skills that you need to do this work? Have you talked to someone who's doing this job right now?" You know, you ask them some questions, and if they're honest with themselves, if they're honest with themselves, you know, they will acknowledge that they, yes, no, or what actions do I want to take to kind of help keep me moving forward? You know, you can't move forward looking backwards. You know, you got to say, okay, well, what's your plan?
Yeah.
When is the last time you had a one-to-one with your immediate manager? Okay. When is the last time you had a performance review and you were able to identify, you know, what level of performance, and how does that compare with everybody else? You know, so people sometimes identify themselves as stuck, and they're not really stuck. They have stopped. Okay. They've stopped continually improving themselves, developing themselves, communicating what they want.
Yeah.
You know, and probably through frustration, they just stopped, and they said they feel like they can't. You always can. Okay. Right. What are you willing to do?
Right.
You know, I know of a position right now, so right. that, yeah. you know, and when they be, it's about being honest with yourself, you know, and you've got to be willing to take action. You got to execute. Okay.
Yep.
Don't just plan. You got to start taking some action. What are you willing to do? Okay. How much time are you willing to give it? How much effort? You know, you got work-life balance, right? So you don't want to spend all your time on work and your family life falls apart. Where are you in life today? Are you able to make that kind of commitment? You know, and so this same guy says, "Well, you know, I hadn't thought about that, Johnny. I have small kids at home, and my wife, is a nurse, and I really need me to." I said, "Okay, but you really need to think about that." Okay, so it's a conversation.
Right.
It's a conversation where a person, you know, looks inside themselves and be honest with themselves in terms of, what am I willing to do? Am I really ready?
Yeah, so self-reflection and introspection is a big part of this. And at various different stages of your life, you also have to kind of remix or reinvent yourself, which you have done so well. Is the timing of the intervention, let's say you have a conflict or a challenge, how important is being able to resolve that conflict or that challenge immediately as it happens?
You know, timing is everything. I mean, everything can't be resolved immediately.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I always say, are you willing to work at it? You know, let's look at it from different sides. Let's look at it from the individuals, from your side. Let's look at it from different angles, because you can see things differently from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen overnight. Okay. No, yeah. I mean, if it's something that's urgent, that, you know, you're trying to deal, we'll try to come to some solutions, but, you know, it's not just about the immediate solution. It's about the bigger picture. You know, where do I go from here? What do I do? How do I do it? And it requires, I always send people back. I said, I want you to think about that. Let's think about it. Okay. Because it might be an emotional thing for you right now. And I need to separate those emotions, let you deal with those emotions. And then come back and think clearly, you know. So, you know, let's not make a knee-jerk response. Let's not do something really quick. You know, one lady called me the other day, said, "I'm done. I'm ready to quit my job." I said, "Don't quit your, why are you ready to quit your job?" She said, "You know, my boss is just driving me crazy." I said, "Don't quit your job because of your boss." "No, you don't do that."
Become with that part of that statistic that we talked about earlier, right?
I said, "I want you to just settle down, you know, and start thinking about, you know, the pros and the cons of what's going on there. Why should you stay? You know, why? And what are you willing to do to resolve it? You know, there's always a solution." Mm-hmm. I said, "Have you talked to your manager?" "Yes, I have." You know, I said, "Have you probably gone one level above your manager and expressed your concerns with respect?" Mm-hmm. No, and so it's not always the best answer doesn't come immediately, and I try to avoid helping people come up with answers. I try to help them think through what's best for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, questions are the answer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's their answer. I'm just going to help you think through what you're probably already thinking and come up with your best solution. Because I don't want it to be my solution, because if it fails and I say, "Well, Johnny, you told me to do this," right, and it didn't work. Okay. Right. Not that I'm going to tell you to go let you go out and do something that's detrimental to your career.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were successful in HR and you were recognized for your efforts and accomplishments, and you had to make many decisions. What was your approach to making decisions that ultimately served the best interests of the employees and the organization? What was the success factor? What was the key factor that led to the right decisions that you made, I guess, is the better way to ask it?
You know, there's a couple things that I think about when you ask me that question. You know, first is when I made a decision, I realized that there's consequences for the outcome. Am I willing to accept the consequences of my decision?
So okay. It's responsibility.
The second thing is, you know, like everybody else, I try to look at the facts. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I try to just look at what are the facts, you know, not the emotion. Okay. Now I say not the emotion, but the third thing is I use emotional feelings plus logic. You get a much better, expanded decision when you use both. You consider the emotions of the situation and right. You consider. So here, an example of that was, you know, with COVID, you know, we had some guidelines, but we were not prepared for how to handle people who need to be away from work.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So so the lines were all blurred and there were all kinds of different guidelines. So, you know, I tried to use the facts as much as I could. I try to look at precedent. I try to look at a lot of things that we had done. And none of them were similar, but, you know, sometimes you got to go with, you know, how is that person feeling? I mean, is it a real situation? Is it not? You know, so you use, the thing that helped me to make the best decisions is take logic and emotional feelings, you know, put those two together.
Yeah.
And come out with the best decision. And I think that works. It works really good, because if you use just facts,
right?
You know, I'll share another example of that, Tim, because my commissioner at this last position, I thought he was excellent at doing that. Okay. He would make decisions. He would really find out how people are feeling. You know, and then he also had to protect the business, you know, and he always erred on the side of feelings, you know, but never going outside the boundaries of what was ethical or what was legal as well.
Yeah.
And people loved him. People loved him for that. You know, you can say you're a people person, but how good are you when it comes time to making those decisions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider the impact on people as well? Now, And I always caution people, we have a business to run, okay? I care about you, but look, at the end of the day, we got to run this business, okay? So I will try to balance that out.
Yeah, thank you so much for those comments. I think that's very critical for people to understand, managers, and, you know, if they want to be successful and if they want to also build successful teams and businesses, I think. And that's what I try to do a lot at All Out Coach, Johnny, explain very abstract concepts using science, you know, using exact sciences, right? In conflict, for example, I talk about in a conflict, I compare it to the third law of conservation of momentum of Newton, right? Where the person that's attacking is actually losing the energy or the momentum that the person that they attack are actually gaining. It's even explained by science, right? Because in any collision, apparently, the momentum is conserved. And that's the law of the conservation of momentum. So that was one example that I had shared previously. And so I think that's the way I see your coaching unique, and not only coaching, but the legacy that you have demonstrated across various different environments also. What were some of your biggest accomplishments or highlights as you moved from being an HR and farm in a private industry into the state, into the different environments afterwards?
Yeah. For me, I guess in the last few weeks, I've done a lot of reflecting. I think about what's been the most successful moments for me. And, you know, in every job I've been in, I've helped save a person's career. You know, I've either a person was failing and I was able to help them turn that performance around, you know, or they needed to be in a certain place because their spouse was relocating and I was able to help them make that happen. Either their compensation was not where it needed to be and I was able to confront the right people to make those salary adjustments. So it was just me understanding the system in terms of how things worked. It's surprising how many folks in our organizations who don't understand how things work. Yep. And I kind of go back to my fifth year at P&G, the story I told you about, I was getting ready to leave and somebody helped me understand how things work. And that's what I like to do, is help people understand how things work. Mm-hmm. Most recently, I had one of the people who worked on my team decided that they were going to look elsewhere. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they were struck. I mean, I always encourage them to look for opportunities to help them grow. Mm-hmm. And so she came to me and said, Johnny, I'm thinking about accepting an offer, with the city. So, you know, I never discourage anybody from leaving. I said, you know, look, I'm happy for you. But I said, but have you really thought it through? She said, no, I'm struggling with it. She said, they're offering me $17,000 more than I'm making now. She said, but, you know, I think of the environment that I'm in. You know, I work flexible. I don't have to come in. I'm working flexible 5 days a week. I'm working at home. I don't have to deal with traffic. I don't have to deal with all of those things. And I said, you're thinking about it right. I said, but listen, one thing you need to understand is that, you know, if you decided to leave, okay, you have to reestablish yourself in a new culture, a new environment. Have you taken a look at what that environment is like that you're moving into? You know, have you considered what the culture is like? You know, what the work, have you talked to people in that environment? So, you know, I just tried to.
Yeah.
And she came back and she said, Johnny, thank you so much. She said, you know, my decision is I'm going to stay. She said, but I had never thought about those things, mm-hmm. you know, having an impact on my success, you know, in the workplace. I said, yeah. So, yeah, I I love to help people navigate through those issues. Okay.
Right.
And not just the employee, employers as well.
Yeah. Okay? No, that brings back a lot of memories with our conversations too, Johnny.
Yeah. You're going to run into obstacles, you know, you're going to run into obstacles in the workplace. And there's always an answer to that, getting around it or going through it or getting, there's always an answer. And I believe that the workplace can be a very, very complicated environment, okay? But you can learn how to navigate through it, and it comes with practice because, you know, by the time you, if you work in the workplace long enough, at some point you will have experienced a number of issues. And that's why I feel like my strength is, Tim, is, and I'm not even sure it's a strength, but, you know, I've been through the cycle many times. And I feel like now my passion, and I use that word very carefully, my passion is helping others succeed and navigate through those to make it easy for them, okay? To make it very easy and that it's not a stressful place.
I remember one quote that you told me in one of our previous conversations, Johnny, when you said there's three stages in life. When you're raw, you're cooked, or you're burned. But it's a cycle. You remember? It's a cycle, you said, right? Am I right?
You remember a lot. You recall everything, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And it's actually quite true. But the fact that it's a cycle, when you reminded me that it's a cycle, that meant to me, yeah, you know, you have to reinvent yourself. You have to undergo a metamorphosis. And, you know, the discussions that you just brought to life now, I pictured myself in my conversations with you, because the emphasis that you put on listening and the empathy was there. That's the experience that I had, you know, because I knew that you took the time to listen to my problems, you know, basically, which people don't have time to do, you know, today. And not only you provided different alternatives and suggestions, and you gave various specific follow-up, it wasn't just advice that was general, but it was specific, alternate options to pursue, and you justified them based on your experience. So, you know, to me, you also include a scientific component to your coaching, to your executive coaching, is the way I distinguish your work and your particular approach. I want to ask you just my one question that I usually ask my guests on All Out Coaches, which is, how are you stretching yourself and how are you lifting others? I mean, that's basically all that you do. So I'll rephrase that and I'll ask, how are you reinventing yourself in your next adventure, or anything that you can preview in terms of any projects that are ongoing, or where people can reach out to you, Johnny?
Yeah, I keep this board in front of me around reminding me what my key processes are, you know, because I'm a little OCD. I tend to go off in a lot of different angles, different things.
Right.
I think the biggest area that I work in right now is helping people understand how they're perceived. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's important. When people meet you, how do they perceive you? Because the way they perceive you is the way they're going to treat you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you need to know how people perceive you. I mean, so I use assessments to help people establish that, to get better, so they mm-hmm. can understand others as well. And I see so much upside in emotional intelligence for leaders and for individual contributors, people working together as teams. I see that having an impact on all of the issues that's affecting the workplace right now, you know, in terms of inclusiveness, you know, bringing people in. And that's the thing, is that how do I retain the good people that I have? Okay, so I see emotional intelligence as a huge piece to help that. So just about all my coaches, you know, all of my organizations, you know, we start there. We create a baseline there. And then we build on that. And, you know, we look at where the gaps are. So those are the two key things that I work on. And, you know, of course, there's always the workplace issues. There's always the things that come up, yep. You know, in the workplace between the employee and the manager, okay, or the employee and another employee. So that's kind of where I spend most of my time. And here's the thing, Tim, is, you know, you talk about reinventing yourself. I call it rewiring. Okay. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked me the other day, said, well, are you going to retire? I said, no, I'm going to rewire. Okay.
Right. Which, yeah.
You know, so I just like rewiring myself. I like rewiring, you know, to go to the next thing because mm-hmm. So I'm a voracious reader. I love self-help. I love things about that I'm interested in. I'm reading, I read three or four books at a time, you know, and there's one right now that I would encourage everybody to read. It's called Reset, you know, and it's a guide to how to rethink organizations right now. How do we rethink so many things? So anyway, just continuous learning, continuous growth, you know, continuous development. Don't stop. Don't stop. Just keep
and
doing
your that. Your organization now. Can you give us the name again and your email?
Yes, it's JJK Workplace, and I changed it from the HR Workplace Coach. And you know, because it's misleading, people think it's more about HR. I'll tell you, The HR has a lot of different functions, and the only function that I really love is employee relations, working with people. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the tough people issues. So it's JJK Workplace, yep. And I have a website. It's www.jjkworkplace.com, and you can reach me at info@jjkworkplace.com.
Great.
And I have all my contact information there. You can schedule calls with me and love to talk to people. I love to have conversations with folks about where they are and where they want to go and how I can help.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Johnny, very much for dedicating your career and your life to creating other leaders, to making a huge impact and legacy, and really redefining human resources and management in general. I hope that you reach out to Johnny because I've lived through a lot of those conversations. I look forward to many more in this successful year ahead in 2022 because I realized also, Johnny, that it's been a year since we've met in person. But you know, because every single conversation that I have with you is a highlight, I hope that this is a highlight for many of you as well. So connect with Johnny, and I'm looking forward to connecting with you in person as well, and wish you a great year ahead, Johnny, and everyone. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Tim.